Josh, whenever we talk with you, it's always something wonderful. And I can't not wait to dive into the topic of your recent email story on the history of the Burt Reynolds Dinner Theater, the pride of Jupiter, Florida.
Yes. Which Charles Nelson Reilly described as the miracle by the truck stop, because there was nothing in Jupiter back when Burt started the theater in 79.
And this was really what at the height of his powers. Everything he did was making a ton of money. Millions of people were going. What led him to do this?
Well, you know, it's funny. I wound up having an interview, I interviewed a ton of people who worked at the theater. I think what was, you know, a couple of them, you know, said they were like, you know, first of all, everybody loved the guy, you know, just adored him. And, you know, as he was really great to the people at the theater. He was really great to his friends. And I think there are a couple things, you know. One, you know, he starts this theater in Jupiter, Florida, a dinner theater. And number one, his aim is he wants to bring real theater with real actors to people who have never had this experience before. And he's from the area. He's from, you know, he's from, I think, Riviera Beach originally, which is fairly close to Jupiter. And he had a home in Jupiter. He was living on Al Capone's old farm hideout.
Of course.
Because when you're Burt Reynolds, you buy that damn farm, right? If you're in that area. So there are a bunch of things. I mean, so he wanted to, you know, have live theater for people who'd never seen it. And kind of, you know, just a way to, you know, pay back, you know, the community he was from and all this. Then there was his career. You know, he really loved it. You know, this was in the midst of him being the biggest movie star in the world. For, you know, about a 6-year stretch, right? About like 75 through 82 or something like that. And he was in this weird thing where, you know, he always wanted to do serious stuff or stuff that wasn't, you know, kind of Burt Reynolds stuff. You know, by and large, you know, a lot of those things, he got offered some great roles, you know, that he then took something else he thought was the right thing that was not a Smokey and the Bandit movie, and then it was never really the right thing. He really loved acting, and he really loved actors, and he just loved the whole process. So that was another motivation, you know, because he really, I think, was struggling with being a real actor and being a movie star. And the third thing, and this, you know, to some extent, I feel like was the most important thing, is on one hand, he said, you know, I really want to give people who are actors the opportunity to learn. You know, he would tell, like, you know, movie actors or TV actors, he'd say, you'll learn more in 4 weeks here than you will, you know, during the entire making of a movie. You'll really learn how to act here. And some people, and there's a great story about Farrah Fawcett, who is a good example of that. But, you know, he also, it was all his buddies, you know, for the most part. I mean, you know, you're the de facto artistic director of the theater was Charles Nelson Reilly.
Although he has some cred, he had some Broadway background and certainly knew the theater well.
And he was, you know, by all accounts, the people who studied there, he had studied under Uta Hagen, which was news to me. And he was a really respected theater teacher in LA. And like Lily Tomlin was one of his students. Bette Midler was one of his students. Liza Minnelli was one of his students. And then the other person there were a million directors. The theater was in business for 10 years. They did about 116 shows. And the three people who directed the most shows, Burt directed the least of these three, but he directed several shows. Then Dom DeLuise, who
of course
I would like to write a really good feature about Dom DeLuise, because there were, and I will share a little bit of Dom with you, but he was also a really good acting teacher. And then Charles Nelson Reilly, and one of the, so they had a group of apprentices. So it was also a training center. And so if you wanted to be an actor, you know, you'd go there and you'd work stage crew and you'd, you know, help do makeup. They had professionals who did this as well, but you kind of understudied all of this. And then, you know, every once in a while you'd get a role in a show or you'd understudy a show. So they, the first day, one of the guys told me, he said, I'm sitting there and I'm waiting. You know, they said, the new acting teacher is coming and he's going to be here in a little bit. And they said, you know, well, who is it? He said, Charles Nelson Reilly. And everybody knows him from what? Match Game?
Yeah.
Basically, and from The Ghost of Mrs. Muir. Right? So you're like, oh, what's this guy going to be like, you know? And then the guy told me, he said, they're all standing against the wall in the theater. And the doors burst open like some Western scene. And in bursts Charles Nelson Reilly. He is wearing a shirt cut off at the waist, a pair of salmon-colored pants, sandals, a Florida State baseball hat, pipe in his mouth, with a big purse over his shoulder, and he walks in, and I cannot do Charles Nelson Reilly. I think I say that on every one of your podcasts, all the impressions I cannot do. But I will not try. But he bursts in and he says, the gay director from LA is here and he hasn't had a drink in 3 weeks. And they all like fell in love with the guy. And they said he was just this fabulous teacher. And then they would have all these famous people who would do the shows there, which I'll talk about, you know, would, one of the things they did was most of them would teach classes. So they had, you know, they had classes, you know, taught, I believe, by Martin Sheen, who wow. did One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest there and did Mr. Roberts there. They had, and then they said, you know, every once in a while, you know, like Liza Minnelli would just wander in, you know, or Dolly Parton would be there and she'd come and sing for them. And Liz Taylor told them all about what it means to work in Hollywood. And it was just like crazy. I mean, you know, all these people who, you know, most of them are native Floridians from the area, you know, or kids who went to, you know, college in the area, who all of a sudden, you know, are like, you know, rubbing elbows with, on the one hand, Vincent Gardenia and Julie Harris and all of these people who are in the shows. I mean, really, some of the show, like they had, they did, what's it called? The Arthur Miller play.
Death of a Salesman
with Vincent Gardenia and Julie Harris.
Wow.
Okay. And like Bert did Same Time Next Year with Carol Burnett. And he mentioned it on Carson one night. And they said the phone in the box office was ringing until 4 a.m. just nonstop. So there were really, you know, there were these great shows, and then there were shows that were like, you know, episodes of Fantasy Island, if the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000 had put them together. You know, there was a you know, one show, the star was Rip Taylor.
Who made Charles Nelson Reilly look very low key, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. I can't even begin to fathom being around Rip Taylor at that place. You know, and then there, you know, there were shows, you know, like Elliot Gould did shows. One of my favorite things is Alice Ghostly was in a couple of shows there, you know, Esmeralda. And this is the best. Three people told me, they said, oh, and by the way, Bert always said she had the best legs in Hollywood.
Alice Ghostly. Wow.
It was nuts. And like, you know, Orson Bean did some show there. And there were just all these, you know, really like just kind of random casts. Like they're, you know, they did One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And Martin Sheen was
Randall McMurtry.
The mismatch. What
was he? Randall McMurphy.
He was McMurphy. They had Will Sampson, who was Chief Bromden, came into the show. And then Adrian Barbeau played Nurse Ratched. With all due respect, I mean, Adrian Barbeau, I'm sure, is lovely and is a talented actress. But, you know, you're like, wait, what? You know, and just great stuff happened. You know, for one woman wound up becoming Dom DeLuise's assistant. And she told me that, you know, and just adored him, just, you know. And there, and he was, of course, on a diet. And they had been instructed in the kitchen to only give him special food by his wife. So he would like to go to other restaurants. And she, you know, she was from the area, and she told me, she goes, and it was just the sticks. And there were places, you know, there was like no place. And one night, she goes, after the show, we go to prepare notes. And he takes me to an Italian restaurant in some place in the middle of nowhere. And it's like 11 o'clock at night. And you could only know this place if you were a local. And she said he'd been there for a week. And they walk into the restaurant and everybody goes, Dommy! And they start playing opera, and Dom DeLuise, and the restaurant is full of locals. And Dom DeLuise sings an entire opera before he sits down to his meal.
Oh my God. I love it. Wow.
And it was so funny, because all I could think was, I was like, God, I'm like, you know, can you imagine being that guy? You know, everywhere he goes at that time, people just are like, you know, immediately love him. And he's probably on stage his whole life and just loves it. And then what my favorite story was, one of the guys who was an understudy turned 21, and he was understudying a show, and he thought, you know, well, let's, you know, and this is, you know, Jupiter now is where Tiger Woods lives, Michael Jordan lives, Rory McIlroy, half the PGA Tour lives in Jupiter. You know, it's all these giant mansions. But at the time, you know, somebody said it was like Mayberry on the beach. It was all dirt roads and like real kind of backwoods Southern type living in Florida. And his sister lived literally next to this swampy river. Okay. And she had his birthday party literally next to this river. And, you know, in these kind of like wetlands, and he said, and there are all these rednecks kind of, and he felt it was important to invite the cast, even though he was sure they'd never show up. And he's sitting there, and, you know, he says, it was just rednecks leaning on trees, drinking beer. And all of a sudden, down this dirt road comes a stretch limousine. The door opens, and out walks Eartha Kitt in a black ball gown.
Oh my God. That is fantastic.
Right? And so this is so great. And she just, and, you know, and all these people, she's the only, you know, African-American person there. And she just, you know, kind of starts mingling with everybody. And, you know, she insists on serving the ice cream cake and all this stuff. And she sees a canoe. And she goes, all right, birthday boy, hop in. The two of them spent the afternoon of his 20th birthday with her in a ball gown.
My God.
Canoeing down a swamp.
Be telling that story for the rest of your life if you're him.
Oh, my. Can you imagine? There was another, somebody said when she did this one show there that she would walk out to the edge of the, you know, proscenium, I guess, or whatever. You know, I'm would that be correct? You're a theater person.
Yeah, that's correct. Is that what it's called? Yeah.
At the start of the show, and she would stand there. And everybody, she had such presence that people would start applauding, right? And then it would just build and build. And she didn't say a word. She didn't do anything. And the whole place had to be told to sit down because to start the show, because her presence was so incredible. You know, and she just, so that was really cool. And like, you know, but there was, you know, there are all these crazy things. There was, they did the Music Man with Jim Nabors and Florence Henderson.
Wow.
And somebody, And one of the things Burt wanted was for these guys to be able to do theater away from New York critics.
Right.
Because he didn't want them to get slammed. And somehow, like, the Palm Beach critics and the Orlando critics would come and they'd rip a show. And Burt was very thin-skinned. And apparently somebody just reduced Jim Nabors to tears with their review. And Burt apparently just dressed the person down to the point where they were in tears the next time they came to his show. So there was a lot of drama. He had his own like little box where his famous friends would come sit with him when they'd come through. And it was like Stallone came, John Travolta came to see Mary Lou Henner in a show. And Liz Taylor came and she spilled a glass of wine on herself and went to the bathroom and came back. And the woman who ran the theater for Burt, who is just a wonderful woman named Elaine Blake Schnell, said she went into the bathroom afterwards and found Liz Taylor's pantyhose in the garbage because they were soaking wet. And she pulled them out and she came back and she said to Liz Taylor, she goes, "I'm going to take care of these because you don't want them framed on somebody's wall."
Josh Karp with us here on Downtown. Am I wrong to see some parallels between Burt at this stage of his career and Adam Sandler? As both guys who the critics maybe didn't always love, but the fans loved their work, and they were so loyal to their friends.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's very, you know, it's like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it was really, yeah, he loved his friends, and he really, you know, had, you know, it was funny, too, because, you know, you think, you know, here's, you know, like his best buddies are Dom DeLuise and Charles Nelson Reilly. And, you know, not, you know, the two most man's man guys. And Burt's dad had been the sheriff in Riviera Beach. And I think, and he, you know, he had a somewhat complicated relationship with his family, but, you know, he really wanted them to be proud of him. And, you know, and his father would come to all these shows and have to sit next to Charles and try to make sense of who his son's best friend was. But yeah, I mean, he really loved his buddies. You know, he loved Jim Nabors. And I think a lot of this was he wanted to have fun, you know, because his movies, you know, I talked to Catherine Bach, you know, who'd been Daisy Duke, and she was in a couple shows there, and Mary Lou Henner as well. And Catherine Bach said, she goes, "If you want to really know a good story about Burt and his friends," she's like, "the story of the making of Cannonball Run 2. she's like, when you're in the desert with Shirley MacLaine and Dean Martin and, you know, Ron Carey and, you know, all these bizarre, just all these random people who are in the Burt crew and Mel Tillis, you know, just like he loved those guys. And he really, you know, it's funny because I think, you know, he's a complicated man, you know, and later in his career, you know, there, he had a lot of, you know, bitterness, I think. But, you know, in truth, I mean, you know, he really, you know, was a great friend to people. You know, everybody said once he started calling you kid, he would do anything for you, you know, and he was really great to the people there. He treated, you know, everybody there with respect, but he wanted to have fun with his friends. And, you know, and so they were there all the time. You know, one of the funny, Dom DeLuise directed Farrah Fawcett in a show. I think it was maybe Extremities, it was called.
Oh, I remember that, didn't that later become a TV movie?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I'm not 100% sure, but, oh, no. She was in, oh, God, I can't remember the name. I'll have to let you know. But it was her and Dennis Christopher from Breaking Away show. And there was one other person. And she was terrified to go on stage. And during their tech rehearsal, you know, Dom sensed that she was nervous. So he decided to, again, burst in through the back door of the theater with wearing jodhpurs, a director's hat, and carrying a bullhorn. And he comes in and he's screaming, "Get the elephants back!" Like he's Cecil B. DeMille and he's got a cast of thousands. And he walks up to Farrah and he sees that she's like falling apart. And they start talking about her performance.
Was it Butterflies Are Free?
Butterflies Are Free. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. And he started talking to her about her performance and, you know, what she needed to do. And she just burst into tears and he said, "Oh my God, what am I doing?" And she said, "Nobody has ever talked to me about anything but my hair, my makeup, and my wardrobe in my entire career."
Oh.
And then she just loses it and just starts crying and crying. And this woman who was his assistant said, she goes, "And if somebody started crying," she's like, "he would cry longer and harder." And she said, "They had to stop for the day because he was destroyed," which I just love. And he would sit in the bar. There was a bar and one of his sons was there with him who was like, you know, 12 or 13. And apparently every day at like 4 o'clock, his son would come. They'd stage an argument and then they'd get in a physical fight that they staged for all these people who had no idea what was going on. And at one point during this, Dom would slap his child in the face and he'd go flying over a sofa and land on the other side. And everybody's going, "Oh my God, Dom DeLuise is beating the crap out of his son." And then they'd do, you know, they'd raise their arms and be like, "Ta-da!" But it apparently went on for, you know, 5-6 minutes.
Oh, man.